Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
For 25 years, Seth Lightman has seen it all. From the newest electric car revolution, solar power, bike lanes made in NYC, and now we are here. More electric cars, need for more renewables and eco-friendly products in our world. Well, now it's time for an all-out podcast for this time. You're listening to The Green Living Guy Show. He's funny, real, exactly on point, and some think his style is so raw, it's crazy. Let's do this, folks. It's time for The Green Living Guy Show with Seth Lightman.
What's up, everybody? It's Seth Lightman, the Green Living Guy. I'm just sitting here, grateful as can be, to talk with a person who I have watched over a period of time for quite some years now, who through the Anti-Defamation League, I got into a chat group with, and have just watched her work on her program, The Lawfare Project, which is beyond brilliant in its help for the Jewish people. And watching her work is like watching a ninja with a sword. So, ladies and gentlemen, I give to you an advocate for the Jewish people across the globe, Brooke Goldstein. Thank you so much for being here on the Green Living Guy Show.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for such a generous introduction. I don't think I've ever been compared to a ninja, but I like it.
A Jewish ninja, I guess. I don't know what you would call it. But, you know, the way that you just handle everything that you're doing is just beyond with grace. And I love the way you do it. And I just want to acknowledge that, you know, right off the bat. It's amazing what you do.
Well, thank you. I just want to say I don't do it alone. I have an incredible staff of dedicated attorneys that are working nonstop on these cases. And, you know, sometimes it can feel a bit overwhelming, but knowing that what we're doing is not just spinning our wheels, but really producing real results. You know, the metrics are real. You file a lawsuit against someone and you either get a court order or you get a settlement agreement and you institute the type of systemic changes that we need to see. We're not just writing letters or posting on social media. Like, we are ensuring consequences for Jew hatred.
And I think that's what's so important. I mean, there's a lot of organizations that are out there, beating the drum, right? But you're... to use the expression in a weird way, you put your money where your mouth is with what you're doing. I mean, you're literally putting the people to the fire.
Well, there used to be a time, you know, when we were called too aggressive. And I'm happy to see really that the Jewish community has woken up, especially after October the 7th, to what we've been warning about for at least the last 10 years and recognizing that impact litigation, that using the legal system that we have every right to do as a minority community is the way to move forward and achieve justice. It's how every other community has changed the environment and ensured equal protection through civil rights litigation. And I think it's really about time that we ramp up our legal efforts, but also pair it with grassroots mobilization. You know, the Jewish community has been on the forefront of mobilizing for others. And now is the time for Jews to mobilize for Jews. And we are seeing that. We're seeing it through the End Jew Hatred Movement and all of our partner organizations.
Yes.
Where the Jewish community is standing up, you know, organizing protests and rallies and getting out there on the street, making a difference.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the protests in front of the president, the head of the UN, all these standing up to these Palestinian hate protests. Well, we're standing up. We're not sitting down. But I want to come back to, how did you if you don't mind me asking, how did you start the Lawfare Project, and how did you get involved so heavily in Jewish rights? Because that's really been a question for mine for quite some time.
Well, how far back do you want to go?
As far back as you feel is appropriate, man.
How much time do we have? I guess, you know, I will say it started when I was in law school and I produced a documentary film. Actually, the subject of the film is very relevant today, especially with all the revelations that are now coming to light in terms of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief Works Agency, the arm of the UN that's now been shown to be collaborating with Hamas and some of its staff participating in the October 7th atrocities. I did a film about these issues that I released when I was 26 years old, and it was about what I believe to be one of the greatest human rights violations of our time, which is the indoctrination and recruitment of innocent Muslim children, Palestinian children, towards violence. And that being really the root cause of conflict. It's hate education. It's what we teach our children. And the greatest form of child abuse, the greatest crime against humanity, is to intentionally murder a child. And you see UNRWA schools participating in this. You see them inviting Hamas into their schools. Their schools are military training bases. They're targeting Palestinian children for violent activities and using them as human shields. So I got into it, you know, more, you know, almost 20 years ago on the very issue, unfortunately, that is still a major problem today, which is the hate indoctrination. And then I produced a documentary film called The Making of a Martyr, which ended up winning an award for best film at the United Nations Documentary Film Festival. Thank you. And since then, I've used my, you know, film skills, my producing skills, and then my legal skills as a lawyer to provide pro bono legal services to the community to uphold their civil rights. I started actually helping to run with Daniel Pipes at the Middle East Forum a legal defense fund where we raised money and worked to provide pro bono counsel to members of the counterterrorism community and the Muslim community who are targeted for speaking out against theologically motivated terror. And after being 2.5 years on the defense side and then writing my book about the subject of Lawfare, I then decided that it was high time for the Jewish community to start enforcing their rights, right? Like the truth is on our side, the law is on our side. We're a minority community. Our rights are being violated. We're being victimized. And yet we had not organized any type of strategic legal offense. So I founded the Lawfare Project to do just that.
Yeah, I mean, I have stories of my own on anti-Semitism, to say the least. I laugh because too many times I have done the alternative, but I've been throughout my, when I was even working for the state, I was asked why I was Jewish and to become a born again during my lunch sometimes. So I know anti-Semitism quite well, and that's another reason why I applaud what you're doing to defend what is right. That's amazing. I didn't know about that movie. I'm going to have to check that out, and I'm going to have to add that a link to that in our podcast, the description, so when people see it stream, it, people will know where they can go to find it. So I'll get all those links from you.
Thank
to
you.
Add to this. Oh, my pleasure. So I guess I'll ask some basic one question. I know that I'm same for me. For many years, I have warned that we were headed down the path that was not looking good on this stuff. What happened? What did you feel? Where were you on the 7th? All that kind of stuff. Like what, you know, like how did, what did it make you feel? Because I know for me, it has brought a lot of different emotions and whatever, but I'm curious what October 7th did for you, really.
Well, I think it succeeded in traumatizing me, just like it has traumatized the rest of the, not just the Jewish community, but the world. You know, I couldn't help but think that the terrorists did exactly what they wanted to. They terrorized us, and that was everybody's initial reaction. But I think now what we've witnessed after October the 7th is this great unification. of the Jewish people, as well as humanity, I think, around recognizing pure evil. And when the Jewish community is unified, it can achieve incredible things. You know, miracles can be achieved. We're definitely outnumbered. But when we stand up for ourselves and we have clarity of thought and purpose, and we shed our political partisan divides, our religious divides, and come together with a unified cause, which is really to end Jew hatred in our lifetime, I think it is possible. Because, look, everything looks very bleak right now. But the haters have come out of their holes, right? There's no more pretending. Right. There's no more pretending that anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. There's no more pretending that the United Nations Relief Works Agency is some sort of arm of peace that we've allowed to really perpetuate conflict in the Middle East. There's no more pretending that Hamas are statesmen and deserve, you know, to exercise political or military control over any, you know, population. There's no more pretending that this, you know, creating a two-state solution, creating another Islamist state, you know, in a sea of failed dictatorships is a solution to anything. It has changed our perceptive, and it has given us the ability to stand strong as a community, because once again, people are trying to threaten us in an existential way, right? Not just Jews in Israel, but Jews around the world are being threatened for being Jews. And it's not a political issue. You know, people like to tie whatever's happening in the so-called Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which I also think is a misnomer. It's a conflict by Iran, where different groups are used as proxies to fight their battles for them against the West. They see as infidels. I think the world is waking up to the real geopolitical situation, and I remain confident that we will win.
Yeah, I sent a message. I forgot his name, but that he's a very distinguished guy who spoke on behalf of the Israeli people at the EU. Tall guy with like really big, burly guy, but he was basically defending us and explaining that, you know, rest assured that if we don't do something, Europe is next. You know, they'll come for the Jews, but Europe is next. And I just said, thank you for standing up for truth. And he liked the comment. It's just like, you know, I know it's not a big deal, but it's just like, I have never in all my life thought that I would become so interconnected with so many Jews in such a short period of time, like you've discussed. It is just mesmerizing to me. But it's the essence of believing in miracles, too.
Yeah, you have to believe in miracles. Really, the survival of the Jewish people over centuries, the amount of persecution and the genocide and the attempts to kill us or subjugate us or enslave us or convert us has been never ending. You know, the Torah says in every generation they will rise up against us. And our job is to continue to spread light and justice and morality and be good and believe that there is good in the world and the world is not evil and try to, you know, stop the evil. And that's really the essence of who we are as a Jewish people. And that's also why we're hated, because people who have evil in their heart, they want to destroy us because we are an example of the fact that the good wins. The good always wins. There will always be victims, but there will always be survivors. And we are the eternal people. And one of the reasons why, and I think this is often mischaracterized as some sort of land dispute, right? There's so-called occupied Palestinian territory, and there's the indigenous Jewish claims, and they're put against each other. So this is some sort of, you know, 21st century land dispute that can be reserved with resolved by some.
I have to laugh at
it. This is, you know, the essence of the issue really is a cultural one, one between good and evil, where there are societies that educate their children that their obligation is to engage in a violent jihad for theological reasons. And then on the other side, you know, the Western world that says, no, there has to be law, there has to be justice, there has to be equality of the sexes. There has to be due process, you know, there has to be freedom of religion, freedom of 100%. Speech. And that's the role really of the civil rights litigator, is to ensure that these basic civil rights and human rights are protected, even of the enemy. So that's why I started my career advocating that the basic rights of innocent Palestinian Muslim children to life, to a education free of incitement to hate and violence, must be protected.
That's right. And folks, if you don't believe, because there are going to be some people that aren't going to believe what we're saying here, there's television shows, folks, where, you know, the next guest is another child. Are you ready to die for Palestine? And the child will say, yes, I'm ready. It's like they're preparing them for death. It is the most horrific thing that you can see as a television show for children. It is the worst thing in the world. And we are through, as what Brooke is saying and what the news is saying and what the truth is coming out is this is being propagated by the United Nations and the UN. RA, which is now being, you know, hopefully will go bankrupt at this rate. It shows that this hate is real. And, you know, Brooke, I'm going to just even bring this up because it mesmerizes me too. You know, I've always tried and bring positivity and light, even into work I do for government, for clean transportation, everything like I do. And I have seen people, and it's not Muslims, it's not that, but I have seen people with that evil in them. The more after the October 7th, I kind of like, you know, zoomed out and I looked at all this stuff and I'm realizing that true natural hate toward Jews is around us and it lives and breathes. And then at times like this, they come out of the holes, as they say.
This Jew hatred, which is irrational, which has appeared, you know, throughout time, is really a sickness of the human condition that hundreds, if not thousands, of books have been written on, but no one has really been able to explain why. What is this? We've been able to explain and talk about and analyze the different forms at which it presents itself, whether it's, you know, hating Jews, like Dennis Prager's famous definition. You hate Jews because they're capitalists, but you hate Jews because they're communists. You hate Jews because they're poor, but you hate Jews because they're, you know, too rich. You hate Jews because they're not white, and now you hate Jews because they're white colonials, oppressors. So there's always an excuse for, but the condition that we suffer from as a human race of this intense and genocidal scapegoating of the oldest, most persecuted minority community in human history, I truly believe that in our generation, we will be able as a Jewish community to overcome this and tap into the same strategies and tactics that were used by other minority rights groups to ensure not only that we have a strong Jewish state, but also that the Jewish community around the world receives equal protection under the law, and that those who target Jews and engage in unlawful discrimination are shunned by the majority of society. There will always be the haters, but the key to suppressing Jew hatred as it comes and ebbs and flow, you know, goes up and down, you know, throughout the ages, is to ensure there are consequences for that behavior that push it down.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, and being called, you know, I've been called a white oppressor. I've been called a lot of things recently, but that zoom out concept that I've been talking about was like even negotiating contracts with people and then saying my quote was too money hungry or using side tropes. It's paramount that we have people like you out there defending our rights and ensuring that there are consequences for things like this, because for too many times I have felt alone, and I wasn't connected with people like yourself or others. And, you know, you feel like, okay, I'll keep my mouth shut. I'll let it go. I'll go along, right? Because I don't want to, you know, spoil the apple cart or anything like that. And then as October 7th comes around, you get Facebook comments from some of these people like your comments are so vile that all your Jewish relatives are rolling over in their graves right now.
These are people that are members of the State University of New York. These are members. This is real stuff going on. And this is something I mentioned to you before, what I wanted. Like, this is the stuff I experience all the time. And before, I used to think it was just me, right? So something with me. No, yeah, there is something with me. I bring light. I try and bring positivity. I try and bring goodness and great innovative ideas. And when they don't like it, the best thing they can do is come after me because I'm a Jew. And it's happened to me most of my life. So to know there's somebody like you out there is reassuring, I think. And I'm doing this almost as I'm speaking out truth, because I want people to know, whoever listens to this, that there is somebody like you out there helping people. What are some of the cases that you have brought so people can get an idea of what the Lawfare Project and what you have done?
So first of all, I just want to address what you said before. And, you know, I hear so many of these stories, and I've come to believe, just through my experience, that almost every single Jew that has been living in the diaspora has had some form of anti-Semitism, has experienced some form of discrimination or Jew hatred, whether it's, you know, comments, casual comments from, you know, people that you work with that are derogatory, targeting you because of your ethnicity or because of where you're born, to outright unlawful discrimination, people being fired for wanting to take off Jewish holidays. You know, we represent people in the medical field, nurses and doctors, who are discriminated against. We represent people in the Israeli tech field who have been subjected to unlawful commercial discrimination in the form of BDS. It's everywhere. It's pervasive, and it's completely unacceptable. And we have the tools now, not just through impact litigation. I want to stress that litigation is always the last resort. And often the parties that we deal with, sometimes it's school, university administrators, want to do the right thing. But they have to be reminded as to what their legal obligations are. And it's so important that if you are subjected to any type of discrimination, that you don't let it slide, that you immediately look to retain counsel, that you immediately get the community alerted to it, and you retain a lawyer who can advocate on your behalf. And it's necessary, because the other side, they have their lawyers, they have multiple legal groups, and they're out filing lawfare lawsuits, frivolous lawsuits designed to intimidate schools, intimidate professors, intimidate businesses. And this has to be countered. While they're abusing the legal system, we are not taking advantage of what our basic rights are under the legal system. And it's created a situation where the parties that are actively engaged in unlawful discrimination are claiming the upper hand, and in some instances succeeded on intimidating. I just heard a story where there was going to be a pro-Israel, a Jewish empowerment event. And there were activists that called up and made threats to the venue, did a whole lot of other things that were not lawful. Or I hear stories, for example, of Jewish students actually getting beaten up on campus. But when we speak with them, they are afraid. They are afraid to stand up for themselves. They are afraid to put their names on a lawsuit. They are afraid to retain counsel. And I always say that if you think about it, number one, there's nothing to be afraid of to stand up for yourself. We are behind you. Nothing's going to happen to you. The opposite, if you allow anti-Jewish abuse to continue and there is no consequences, that behavior will start getting worse and worse. Students, for example, come to us and they're telling us horror stories of what's happening on campuses and how they're being treated, not just by their fellow students, but by the faculty of the schools. And they say, you know, my career is in the hands of this professor, or I don't want to be retaliated against if I complain. And I want them to understand, and it's so important that you need to understand that if you retain counsel and you have people advocating for you, the chances of you being retaliated against become slim to none. Because if they do retaliate against you, that just adds to our case. It's an open and shut case. You know, it's more,
yeah,
it's easier, yeah, to prove retaliation than it is to prove discrimination sometimes. They wouldn't dare.
Absolutely.
When they
absolutely
realize that you have, you know, major law firms and experienced litigators behind you advocating for you, your situation will improve drastically. And not only that, but by you standing up for your community, you are helping to improve the situation for other students in similar positions.
Well, I will take thought of this, and we will figure talk about this, because I'm like I said, after October 7th, and I'm speaking up, and I'm putting my heart on the line because I want people to understand and appreciate what you do. And why I have appreciated what you do, because I've been afraid to speak up. I've been afraid for so many years. So it's nice to know that there's somebody like you out there, and a firm, not just you, but a firm of lawyers out there doing this for people. Because, yeah, like I said, I have felt alone for a long time about this stuff and didn't know where to go or what to think, because I didn't know who was there for me. You know what I mean? Like, I really didn't. So you're doing a blessing, Brooke, really. You're helping the people more than you're doing great stuff. So what are some other, I know recently there was with this UNRA and with Iran and being basically Israel being a proxy war. And I know that my congressman is Mike Lawler has definitely been clear that he knows this is an Iranian proxy war. Where do you see lawsuits, given that the UN is basically stacked with Iran? I mean, this is just getting to the point where the UN is becoming the arm of country of Iran at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So with an issue as big as the United Nations, it's not a lawsuit that's really going to change here. You need systemic change within the international system. And I think we're seeing that countries... upon this realization of how bad it is, are realizing that they need to cease their funding of this organization, which really operates as one of the largest terrorist money laundering, child abuse, child trafficking entities in the world. And the United Nations in general normally has this element of immunity. You can't just sue the United Nations in a New York State court. However, what we're seeing now are arms of the UN that are participating in terrorist activity and in murder, which should not receive immunity. And so we are exploring with a group of attorneys a myriad of options. Also, I'm quite disturbed, equally disturbed, to see the reports by groups like Honest Reporting that apparently, you know, Associated Press, Reuters, CNN, all of these companies had been working with contractors, photographers, videographers, who also apparently are being accused of participating in October 7th attacks. So yeah, the rot, yeah, is very deep and wide, and we need to not just use the legal system, but, you know, we need to engage in activism and political activism and lobbying, and really it's up to the governments to cease the fact that they're giving them hundreds of millions of dollars. UNRWA's budget is $1 billion a year, which is insane.
UNRWA is a billion a year?
Yeah.
A billion with a,
yeah,
B.
That's what they said on their website.
Oh, my God. And what they have done. What they have done.
Yeah. But
it's really interesting. And you did bring up something, and I wanted to kind of, it's very interesting that we're living in these times, and I bring this up because you said a lot of revealing, a lot of revelations are coming out. It's like we're living in the times that we never thought we would, kind of thing. But everything, all these cloaks are being removed. Almost, we're seeing the evil at its core, and it's being exposed. Before, it was never exposed. Now it's like out on the table for us to all see, and Hamas is, or Hezbollah, or any of them, are just being like death to Jews.
Yes, but you know, those of us in the field who've been covering this have been saying this and screaming at the top of our lungs. But there has been a concerted effort to not just brush aside, but to stigmatize. you know, members of the counterterrorism community, members of the advocacy community who have been saying, look at what is happening on campus. Look at the fact that Qatar is spending $1 billion influencing campus education. The response has been, well, that's Islamophobic. You're a racist. And this progressive movement, which has attempted to stifle free and open dialogue about issues of national security, you know, has provided this cover for all of this stuff being ignored. But what happened after October the 7th, again, is that people were shocked at how this has been happening and no one's been doing anything about it. And the state of indoctrination on our college campuses that are not just anti-Jewish, but anti-American, and the role that foreign funding from Russia and from Qatar have played now in destabilizing our society. So these are all issues that have come to the forefront, and they must be discussed. But listen, Seth, I want to thank you for having me on the podcast.
Brooke, this has been a pleasure. You have no idea how enlightening and enriching this 30 minutes has been for people. And what I'm going to ask you to do, just to wrap it up, is to let people know how to find you online, because I think if we give your handles at the end of this, it's going to be a good thing. Besides, you're go to Brooke Goldstein, or where can they find you online?
Okay, so please consider following me on Instagram. It's Real Brooke Goldstein. And our website is thelawfareproject.org. And you can see all of the cases that we filed there. It's L-A-W-F as in Frank, A-R-E is Lawfare, thelawfareproject.org. And of course, you need to visit the End Jew Hatred Movement, which is on Instagram at End Jew Hatred.
Brooke Goldstein, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for your time, Brooke, and stay the course. You're fighting the fight, and we love what you're doing.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Green Living Guy Show with your host, Seth Lightman. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.